You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and of course, Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd the Chelsea Fancast. And Chidgey, it's been a bad week because...
So has it ever?
They've put you in Twitter prison.
I know, this is appalling. Well, not me personally, actually, probably more importantly, they have put the entire Chelsea Fancast Twitter account into Twitter jail. But I was trying to update the profile last night. And, you know, I'm a bit, you know, old and tired and have fat fingers. And I managed to, I think, because it all happened so quickly, you know, it's like being arrested in the middle of the night without any preparation at all. But I basically managed to, I think, change the date of birth to something that was under 13, because that's the cutoff. And they said, "We've locked your account. Do not move.
Is there a way
we have a gun pointed at your head?
Can you rectify this?"
Well, I had to send them off some proof that I am, in fact, the old codger that I am.
Well, I was about to say, surely you could just show them your tweets remembering Chelsea players from 1923.
No, but I think here we go. Actually, this could be a bit of a Chidge rant about modern society. Because basically, can you get hold of a human being to explain this predicament? Can you, hell? It's all automated tweets, emails, people...
Robots.
It makes me want to punch them in the face.
Hard. Algorithms and
Jack
robots.
Jack Dorsey, I'm coming for you, mate. That's the end of it.
Jack Dorsey, what do you mean, the band leader of the 30s?
He will be a band leader by the time I finish with him, mate.
Clever. Witty. Well,
it wasn't just a frustrating week in terms of Twitter.
Well, in fact, actually, Twitter are the Burnley of the social media world, aren't they, really?
No,
in
they don't.
What sense? Waste dark time. Arts, dirty tricks, time-wasting. It's all there, mate.
Ooh.
And a bit of, you know, a few kind of reducers just to, you know, finish you off, really.
So
they have to have a person in black to help them as well, the man in black.
Yes.
And that was the referee, of course.
Who was it on?
Kevin Friend.
It was Kevin Friend. I've forgotten already.
It was disastrous.
He was awful,
he was worse than awful.
No, and you know about this because you're a qualified referee.
Oh, my goodness me. I think they just choose five minutes. It doesn't actually matter how many minutes were wasted. They'll choose five because they don't want to offend anybody. So it didn't matter how many times. The amount of cramp, they kept thinking, they must be the unfittest team in the whole world there. They've fallen down every 5 minutes, they fall down. And the rest of the players go off to the sideline and have a drink. It's completely illegal.
Yeah, I know, but it's football at the end of the day, isn't it? So what else has
but
happened?
It's not football.
Week?
What's that to do with football?
Well, no, it's modern. Well,
it's
hang
modern
on a minute.
Football.
I'm not actually going to give Burnley or Dyche a hard time about this because, you know, we've done this enough times. And as far as I'm concerned, it's part of football. If you're going to blame anybody, and I think that's possibly where you
blame
might
the
be
ref.
Going, you blame the ref.
Of course.
He's there to stop it.
Indeed.
He's there to sort it out.
Indeed.
But you can't, I mean, you know, this is modern football. They're going
to
do it.
Everybody, Bournemouth did it to us.
Every
but
other
we
team
do it
too.
Everton.
We do
not
it
Not to the extent, I've never seen players go down with cramp as much.
Jonathan,
I've seen Mourinho do
Miguel
it.
Miguel Delaney's article
and
a few weeks ago, before the Liverpool match, he coached them on how to waste time from the first minute 17 different ways.
He did.
We do it
too. Only 17.
Well, I think, I don't know, I'm just pulling that out there.
You chose that from the ether, didn't you?
So we do it too. So I'm not going
to really use that as an excuse. Well, let's say we used to do it. I don't think we have the nous at the moment to do it.
Well, that's another
problem. Because we have a completely naive manager.
Poor game management, mate.
Yeah, completely.
You both sound outraged, not just by Twitter. Do you feel that you were hard done by against Burnley?
No. Not in the least.
No, you're hard done by the referee. No, this is a way of playing. Yeah. It's
How, I mean, what was it?
David Luiz said
like
it. Yeah, the Indeed, we did.
Yeah.
So it's legitimate.
No, it's terrible. It's within the laws.
It's part of the game.
But the referee should stamp on it. There should be, you know, I'll go on about this for ages. There should be an independent timer of the game, which I think they're considering, who sees these things, because they sort of lumber, a friend lumbers about and misses the fact that...
Well, friends are rubbish.
It's just rubbish. How on earth have they managed... Why doesn't the assessor in the stand say... Actually, you got that completely wrong.
I know.
You know, this constant business, they've got to do something about taking goal kicks. They just cheat. The idea originally was that goal kicks they said you could take a goal kick from anywhere, because originally goalkeepers used to take the ball to the other side where the ball had been and waste time. So they said, take it from anywhere. So what they do is they go the other side to where they feel like it, and then they move it around a bit, and then they take ages, and that becomes time wasting.
Here's a question, though, for you as a qualified referee.
As a qualified referee.
One of the things I hear most, thrown most at referees in terms of criticism, particularly from ex-players, is, well, the trouble is, they just don't know the game because they've never played it. So I actually wonder how fully aware they are of all of these dark arts that are being employed week after week after week by most football teams.
Well, I think another thing to be said is I don't think they're bright enough, lots of these referees. I don't think they look at the game forensically to notice what is going on. Otherwise, they would have stamped upon it. Well, we know, we've played the game, but what, at park level?
Ropley Tigers is hardly an elite level football player.
No, but nonetheless, I don't think you need to have played at that level to understand.
But I get
what's
this with some
on.
Managers too. Why? I mean, I can see stuff going on the pitch. Why can't they? You know, it's bewildering.
Well, I suppose it's because they allow it. It's permissible, isn't it, within the professional game? Perhaps it's that they think, no, well, that's allowed. Whereas it's not for us as a viewer. Perhaps it's a viewer, a crowd thing. You're looking at thinking, that shouldn't be taking place. And the players are thinking, no, that's fair game.
Do you think with these referees it's as straightforward as intellect? Or is there a pressure aspect as well, where they have the crowd baying, they've got everyone at home on Twitter sounding off, hard to deal with?
Well, I'm sorry to damn them by saying they're all a bit thick, but I think what I mean by it is I think that they give in. They're unwilling to stick themselves ahead of other referees. I think they do what is required of them. In fact, Oliver was the only one who stuck his head above the parapet
when he sent off Herrera
because they were serial fouling, and he mentioned it. And he since hasn't really applied it. So perhaps he's bowed to pressure. You're bowing to peer pressure, obviously.
You say that, and yet one of the biggest gripes we have against referees is the fact that they're all completely inconsistent. One referee will give a decision for something and another one won't.
No, but I think they're consistent over time wasting.
They're consistently rubbish.
They're consistently rubbish over time wasting.
Well,
I keep mentioning this 5-minute thing that they come up with. It's 5 or 6. Weirdly, Fergie, of course, got 7 and 8 minutes, and everybody despaired of it. But it doesn't make any sense to me as to why he'll do that thing occasionally of touching his watch. But you know, I'm in the crowd rather pathetically and nerdily, I start my watch, I start my clock on the phone, and I go, that's a minute and a half, that's an extra minute and a half, and the three substitutions, that's 6 substitutions, minute and a half, and we've had 3 or 4 minutes more, so it should be 7 or 8 minutes.
But it beggars belief that a referee doesn't have a enough of a grasp of the game to understand that Burnley are going to try and time waste from minute one.
Indeed.
And particularly if they score a goal early, which they did. You know, why don't they know that? Anybody knows that. There are people yet to be discovered in the Amazon rainforest that know that. Why doesn't he? It's ridiculous.
No, that's exactly my point. Why aren't they applying that aspect of the laws to it?
Why apply common sense?
But it's ungentlemanly conduct. It's completely... There's a big...
But that's the point.
It's the point you're making, Jonathan,
first minute.
But it's just not cricket.
Well, I'm afraid...
But it's not football.
But I play a lot of cricket as well, and I have the same thing. I'm always saying to people, I don't play the game like this. Sorry.
Yeah, but that's the same in cricket, mate. Look at the overrates, the slowing down what they do there, tying the bootlace. Professional... This is my point. It's part of the game.
So the ref has to be the person to deal with it.
It's like, I hate the fact that Salah is a diving cheat, but that's modern football. He's not the only...
He loves you.
He's not the only diving cheat. Every team has diving cheats. Yes. It's up to the referees to get the decisions right.
There's even a player called Cheat, Diving Cheat, isn't
that's,
there?
He plays for Liverpool, doesn't he?
Also known as Salah. But the whole process is that even the umpires in cricket don't get on top of sledging enough.
But sledging's fun, Jonathan. Sledging's fun.
The abuse that people get when they've had relatives die and they're told things like that is fun, is it?
Well, there are comments.
I'm afraid that happens a lot.
Yeah, but there is...
The wit's gone out of it. It's getting personal.
Obviously, if it's David about Warner. Death, it's not fun. But David actually, Warner's where it's lighthearted and a wind-up, that's part of it, isn't it?
I've never thought that. I think the whole process of when a batsman is batting and as your bowler is about to release the ball and somebody chirps in from slip.
That's bad.
That's out of order. It's against the laws. You walk away.
That's against the spirit. Well, that's unjudged.
That's against the spirit of the game, yeah. Completely.
Anyway, can we tease the quiz before we have to go to a break?
Quiz.
It's new. It's a new quiz. It's not the same quiz this week.
You've changed the format.
Isn't it about players, people who play for
Chelsea? I'm really excited.
And Man United.
No, it's not. I'm really excited.
But I've got...
Shush.
I've worked it all out.
I know, but it's not that. We had that last time we played them. So not this time.
But that's why I knew it.
Will you be quiet?
That's why I got it right.
I'm really excited because this is new and I planned this. We are collaborating with the great Chelsea Chadder, the Chadmeister.
Perfect.
Who just knows everything, and he always gets our quiz right.
Does he know how to unlock a locked Twitter account?
Well, no, that's the only disappointing thing is I can't plug it on our Twitter account. But anyway,
you can use your own.
I will. I'll use Stamford Bridge. Anyway, shush. Right, the quiz is
miracle.
The quiz is who are the last 10 Chelsea players to score against Man United? Ooh. And if you know the answer, then you need to tweet at Love Sport Radio. And at Stamford Chidge. Of course, you could phone us up on 0208 70 20 558.
I'd like that. Phone.
What? Yeah. Well, you don't have to. You're already here, mate.
No, not me. I'd like them to phone.
Oh, yeah. They need to phone up.
Me? I could phone them. Yeah. That'd be good.
It's a great quiz.
I could pretend to be someone else.
Chad's going to do it every week for us from now on, because we've now run out of teams to kind of...
I see. What do you mean every
week? So
we've only got matches.
We're going on all summer, mate.
Are we?
Oh, yeah, baby.
We're reinventing the wheel so far on the Chelsea Fan Show.
We have annihilated
Twitter. We've annihilated Premier League referees. Yep. We've annihilated...
Salah, indeed.
And sledging in cricket.
And David Warner.
Yeah. Everyone, basically, is in for it this Friday evening. But coming up, it's time for the press report with Liam Toomey, who is the Chelsea correspondent for ESPN.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd of the Chelsea Fancast. We just had a member of the Love Sport staff suggest that they're running the London Marathon on Sunday. Jonathan asked him when he thought he'd finish, when he'd get round by. He said, I'm hoping by Tuesday. So fingers crossed for good results, both in the football and in the marathon. But I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Liam Toomey, who's a Chelsea correspondent for ESPN. Evening, Liam. Thanks ever so much for joining us. How big is this match against United for Chelsea?
I think it's absolutely huge. You have to look at it from both sides, really, and it looks to be decisive for the Chelsea top four hopes, but also for Manchester United. And I think it's a really fascinating one in terms of the results of recent weeks, because this so-called top four race has almost been more like a staring contest where everyone blinks in the last couple of weeks. I mean, United have been in absolute free fall under Solskjaer. Their bubble has well and truly burst. Arsenal have lost the last two games and look terrible away from home. And even Spurs have stumbled a little bit. So Chelsea, despite looking far from convincing themselves and missing a massive opportunity against Burnley on Monday to really take control of this, are in a really good chance. And despite the fact that they've had a very tough time away from home against the top six teams this year, I think there's a strong case to say that they should go to Old Trafford with some real confidence, purely because United are playing so badly. And I also think that... Eden Hazard has shown quite a few signs that he's returning to the form of autumn, which is great news for Chelsea and bad news for their remaining opponents.
And in the autumn of his career too, Liam. Liam, I liked your question actually to Sarri today at the presser, which was very much about the away form. And I giggled the fact that you reminded him that we haven't actually beaten anybody in the top six yet. I mean, how much, given that form, are you kind of satisfied with what he said? And are you feeling confident? Because I'm not, to be honest.
Well, I was trying to be careful to phrase what could have been a confrontational question in quite a non-confrontational way.
You were good.
I genuinely wanted a proper answer. Yeah. And I think he gave one. I think he gave quite a thoughtful answer, at least trying to explain the circumstances around each of the defeats. I mean, it's not as if all of Chelsea's away defeats against the top six sides this year have been the same. I think Sarri has tried different things. I mean, he tried the absolutely suicidal press high game plan against Manchester City, which saw them destroyed inside the first 20 minutes. They were more conservative in other games, but I think their bigger problem, as we saw away at Arsenal and away at Spurs, has been just not matching the intensity of the other team from the first minute. And more recently, that's been a problem at the start of the second half, not at the start of the first. But if it is a problem at the start of the first half this weekend, they could be in trouble, because I think the one thing that you can guarantee from United, if not quality right now, is that they will start this game at a high tempo and try and press Chelsea, because that's exactly what they did to Manchester City.
And
as
they
well.
Didn't. They didn't play badly in the first half, actually, United, doing that. I haven't watched the game.
I thought they were okay.
I think they were then undone because of... I think the last few minutes of the first half, there was a kind of intensity from City that there hadn't been before. But I don't think Chelsea would deal with it if they press as much as that or play even as intensely as that. I think we wilt. I haven't got great confidence in us dealing with that. In fact, all the first 40 minutes of watching that game, I thought if United play like this against us, they'll be 2-0 up. Because I have no faith in us keeping that. Can I just ask you a question, Liam? Do you think the last few games he's been playing less Cerismo? Because it seems to me that they almost just hang back and defend, and you get the odd little moment of four or five passes. You think, oh, that's quite Cerismo-like. But otherwise, you know, this isn't the same desire to play in his patterns. Do you think he's just sort of given into it, or is that the players saying we're going to play this way, or is he adapting?
Well, I think the broader theme of the last few weeks is that Sarri does seem to care about keeping his job, because he has made alterations. He hasn't been as much of a stubborn Wenger type as maybe people feared at one stage. I mean, he did, albeit belatedly, start playing Callum Hudson-Odoi and Ruben Loftus-Cheek
yes.
and Emerson over Marcus Alonso, although part of that was injury, of course. And they have taken a more sensible / conservative approach in certain games, I think, ever since the Carabao Cup final, really.
But he seems incapable of doing things like putting two attackers up. I mean, Spurs against Brighton were interesting when he brought on... what's his face, who hadn't played for years? Can't remember the centre forward, but they then had.
Llorente.
Jansen. Yeah. And you thought, well, that makes sense because all Brighton are doing is defending. The same with Burnley. They needed to do a like for like of just swapping Giroud for Higuain was just seemed to me bizarre. He could have put on four forwards if possible, and because they weren't going to attack at all. I suppose he was slightly scared that there'd be any breakaway, but I was. You know, I don't think that that's going to... I'm still worried by that aspect of his conservatism. But yes, I agree. I think he's becoming less stubborn as the season's going on.
Yeah, and on that note, I think I wouldn't actually be stunned to see Eden Hazard as a false nine again at Old Trafford on Sunday, because I think the pattern in recent big games over the last couple of months has been that Sarri has long since accepted that he can't get Hazard to play to the system. He can't get him to press with the rest of the team. He can't get him to work back defensively. And so against big teams that have attacking threats, he's invariably put Hazard up front where his lack of defensive work rate hurts Chelsea less. And I think the the interesting thing about that is there's a possibility that Hazard as a false nine could actually work better against United than it would against a team like City or Spurs or Liverpool, because they're not as good at pressing.
We'll see
they're
about
stop.
That. You may be right, Liam, but I tell you what, if he does that, I can see an absolute meltdown from a lot of Chelsea supporters, because they'll view it as a negative thing. Listen, I'm glad you mentioned Hazard again, because I know that was discussed in the presser as well, wasn't it? The fact that he's not been included in the PFA's Team of the Year. You know, what did you think of Sarri's response to that?
Well, I think he made a valid point, which was that the Premier League table has heavily influenced that team. I mean, you look at that team, the only player who doesn't play for Man City or Liverpool is Paul Pogba. And I think Paul Pogba's inclusion is
laughable.
I think it's heavily influenced by when the voting was done.
True enough.
So when the majority of players voted was on that incredible hot streak United had when Solskjaer first came in, where Pogba, I think, scored about 9 goals in 9 games and got about 6 or 7 assists. So, and they are also apparently shoehorned into a 4-3-3 formation when making those selections. So if they'd even had a 4-2-3-1, there would have been a place for another attacking midfielder. I still think Hazard's had a better season than Sadio Mane.
But I agree.
And couldn't they have fitted Hazard in anyway? Because if you drop Bernardo Silva into centre mid, where he has operated at points this season, then you can go, well, see you later, Paul, and Hazard has had the better season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Hazard has paid for the fact that Chelsea just haven't been as relevant this season as a team. And so people have been watching them less. I think that includes other players around the league, and they all know how good Hazard is, but I think maybe they've just watched him live a little bit less this season, because Chelsea have not been relevant at the top of the table. And as a result, despite the fact that his stats are so good, maybe suffered a little. I mean, the idea that he can make a 5 or 6 man shortlist for PFA Player of the Year, and yet he can't make the team is a little bit silly. But as I also pointed out on Twitter, I think the PFA Team of the Year is never something to get worked up about.
Definitely.
People do every single year because they always forget that players don't take their votes seriously. In some cases, they don't even fill out the form themselves.
Yeah.
So if the players don't take it seriously, we shouldn't.
No, I couldn't agree more. Well done.
And absolutely. And the kind of player who Hazard is, you'd have thought that his response to this might be, rather than moping, going, I'll show you who's a proper player and I'll show you who should be in that Team of the Year. Liam, lovely to speak to you. Thanks
so
much for your time. Liam Toomey there, who is the Chelsea correspondent for ESPN. Coming up, Burnley. It was a game of two halves.
This is Love Sport.
Wins for Chelsea, or not, because they drew 2-2 with Burnley.
Win on Sunday?
No. Well, possibly.
No.
No?
No, they're going to lose.
They're going to lose?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt.
Why do you have no hope?
Win any of the next 3 games.
Was it because of Burnley? Have you lost all hope now?
Yeah, I don't think he has it in him now to make it work. All the players. I really don't. I've finally lost
it. I wish we'd made a film of this season.
Yeah, because I've had great hope.
Actually, do you know what? I could do it, because I could cut all the bits of the podcast.
Yes, get together.
Because the Damascene conversion that Jonathan has had this year has been hilarious. It's gone from Sarri in, Sarri in, Sarri in, to Sarri not sure, to Sarri out.
No, I'm not saying Sarri out.
Well, Sarri, okay,
Sarri
it all about.
No, I'm just saying I don't think that he has the ability to make it work. I'm not. So he might make it work next year. If he has a pre-season, if he's there, if they haven't got any transfers, and he gets whoever he has to play the way he wants.
Okay.
But that team cannot play the way that he wants them to.
Listen to yourself, old chap.
I am. I've just very much
resonated. You've got headphones on. You can hear yourself speak.
I can hear myself.
But, I mean, in all seriousness, if you hear what you just said and run it back in your head, you'll understand why that doesn't make sense. Because whilst I agree with you that he has not got the right players to implement the way that he likes to play. I don't want to say Sarri.
Yeah, no, me neither, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, to play the way... Okay, so what you're saying is, what if he's here next year? He might get the players to play the way...
No, he won't.
He'll never get the players.
I didn't say that. Didn't I said
you?
He wouldn't.
Well, that's what it sounded like.
I said he'd have a different set of players.
Will he?
Yes, he will.
Why?
Well, because they'll bring all the loanees back.
Who are worse than the players that we've got
at the moment. Yeah, but they'll play a way that he wants them to play. I'm not saying it'll be any good.
I had a Brian Cant moment in my head then.
What, you mean...
Play away!
I was never going to say, yeah. I was going to say, was it...
One for the teenagers,
was
Johnny.
It Jack and Ori I was thinking of? No, he didn't do
Chloe,
Jack and
Ori.
Chloe
Benjamin.
Play away.
There you go. Jeremy Irons.
He had a kind of way of speaking like that, didn't he?
Play away!
Play away.
Anyway, going back to what's through the round window, Jonathan.
Yeah, no, but I think if they sell a lot of them, a lot of the players.
What if they can't buy any because of a transfer ban?
Well, they'll keep with the same lot and we'll finish 10th.
But this is my problem, and this is my diagnosis of the issue, is that, we heard rumours this week, of course, that he wants to sign another Napoli player.
Two Napoli players.
Okay, who are they? Insigne?
And what's with the left back signing with an H? What's his name?
He's signed.
The right back, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I'm sorry, but that's not what it... You can't, just because it worked at Napoli... Buying all of Napoli's players and making them play in Chelsea's kit's not going to solve the problem.
Excuse me, you're falling for the old,
I know,
trick.
But
that's just made up by somebody.
If in fact there is any veracity to those reports, but the point's still valid. You know, he's not going to be able to get them to play the way he wants to with this current club of players. Okay, the only time Sarri ball worked was in Napoli at the Serie A when they, in Spurs terms, put the pressure on Juventus. So,
on a game-by-game basis, is Sarri getting it right? If we look at Burnley, okay, it was points dropped. Was it Sarri who was at fault?
Well, it was a fault leaving Gwane on, yeah.
Actually.
And it was a fault not putting two on, as I said to Liam.
I mean, look...
Because they made no effort last 20 minutes to do anything but defend.
The bottom line is, look in the Burnley match, Matt. And it's a shame I didn't see you, actually. I had a cracking time apart from the football. anyway, t'was ever thus, really. But, you know, we played brilliantly in spells in that first half. In fact, actually, overall, attacking-wise, we were much better. We had, I think, as many shots as we had when we stuffed them 4-0 up there.
We did, yeah.
However, two brilliant goals, absolutely brilliant goals, but the defending was beyond Keystone Cops, not for the first time this season.
Not only that, but also what was appalling was that the Burnley goals were very similar to the goals they scored the week before.
I know.
So in other words, nobody had done any analysis of what they did, what they've been doing.
I mean, I'm going to use it again. You know, there are people yet to be discovered in the Amazon rainforest that knew Burnley were going to do that set-piece move.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why didn't our coaching staff?
Yeah.
Why didn't they tell our players?
Yeah, I agree.
Or are they really that stupid?
I agree.
Who knows?
I agree.
I mean, it really drives me up the wall because that's what killed it. Burnley are I've got a lot of time for Sean Dyche. I really have.
Other than Barnes.
Barnes. Ashley, I can't Barnes. Say what I think about Barnes on air.
I did say last
week. I won't just be in Twitter prison, mate. That's for sure.
It was actually very dangerous. I said Ashley Barnes, who I hate. And I got an immediate telling off from
by whom?
Producer.
Did
my
you?
Producer. He said you shouldn't say that.
Why not?
Well, I rather feel why not. And he... He's scoring a lot of goals and he's actually quite an effective player. He's a very Burnley player.
But I detest
the way he behaves on the pitch.
He needs a slap, basically.
There was a terrible moment where, it's emblazoned on my memory in front of me. I was practically on the halfway line. And in fact, it's so emblazoned, I can't remember who the Chelsea player was. But anyway, Friend was behind him, behind them both. And he just looked to see what was happening. And barged into the player, and Friend did that thing of crossing his hands to say, no foul. And all he'd done is barge the Chelsea player out of the way of the ball. So A, Friend was completely ridiculous as to say no foul. B, because he'd looked and almost winked at the ref and ducked into it, and it was an obvious foul. And you go, and it was just a cynical and... the player wasn't prepared, so was actually injured. And you go, that is just rubbish. Mm. The fact that the referee then went, no foul, almost condoned it.
Quickly, I know you've probably got to push on for a break in a minute, but continuing the idea of, well, why is this Sarri's fault, or why does he have any culpability in this? I think the marking, it's tempting to say it's all zonal marking's fault, but there's clearly an issue with Chelsea defending set pieces at the moment. He said in the presser today, it's not about the defensive line, it's about the defensive phase, and he talked about, you know, people scoring shots from 25 yards out in the Slavia Prague game, and that's, I agree, you know, got a bit to do in the midfield. But he should be sorting this out. We're in the last few weeks of the season. I can't understand why these kind of issues haven't been addressed. And the other thing that I would certainly point the finger at him for is his in-game management is just non-existent. It's like-for-like subs. You know, this was a match we had to win. You know, if we win that match, suddenly the heat's off a little bit in terms of getting in the top four. So don't bring Giroud on for Higuain. bring Giroud on and Higuain. I mean, do something different.
I've said this.
I know, but
we're saying it again.
But I'm doing it in a different context.
You're doing it in a different voice.
And of course I am.
Yeah, because you're you.
I'm doing it in the style of Jonathan Kidd, though.
No, you know.
I am, because I'm getting very upset.
Oh, good, thank you.
I'm going out of control.
But can I say about him is...
It's this coffee. I forgot that I'm not supposed to have caffeinated coffee.
You'll be up
I'm
all night.
Wired, mate.
Oh, wow.
Wired.
Are we going out, Chidge? Is that the solution?
Well, yeah, all three of us?
Definitely. Yeah, why not?
Oh, yeah, love it.
Anyway, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say that I actually think that he might then... There's this feeling somewhere in the back of my head that if he's around next season, he might actually get it right. I have this kind of suspicion.
Look, I've always said this. I have no personal animosity to him, as many Chelsea supporters, many mates of mine do. And I think that actually, in many respects, Sarri's the kind of the wrong man at the wrong time. He's being scapegoated for a lot of stuff that's been festering along for a long time. I have no animosity towards him at all. In fact, I'm just ambivalent. I mean, if he stays next year, he stays. There's nothing I can do about it. If he's brilliantly successful and we win loads of stuff, we play brilliant football, I'm going to be ecstatic because I'm a Chelsea supporter and I'll be happy. If he gets fired next week, I'm not going to cry an ounce.
No, I agree completely.
I'm absolutely agnostic and ambivalent about it.
I'm the same. But there's so many... You know, talking about the trajectory of my...
Very good recovery.
Thank you. I haven't recovered quite yet. Though,
can you say Mia Vojvic? I can't.
Mia Vojvic.
Yeah, I get it wrong every week
on my
show.
Supposed to be saying though, so I don't know.
It's become a bigger in Love Sport joke than the blimmin' Twitter prison.
The trajectory of my loving Sarri and then going off him and now going to a situation where I don't think we're going to win any of our last three games. I think you're allowed not to agree, but I'm talking about my trajectory because you had a go at me about
my trajectory about different from yours.
Yeah,
or in fact, as we should say, my trajectory is bigger than yours.
Stop talking about your trajectory, gentlemen.
Yeah, sorry, it is a little bit personal, isn't it? But no, what I'm saying is it may still make sense. I'm allowed to look upon him favourably, but then think it hasn't worked.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because you were saying, "Well, I'd love we could take a film. I could look at all the stuff you bet." But yeah,
because it would be quite funny.
I was hopeful it would be funny.
It just shows you.
But
how,
also, I was hopeful and how we changed. Well, it's watching the games and just. Seeing that if you repeat the same idiocy, how on earth is that improving?
Coming next season, Jonathan Kidd on the Fancast, the documentary.
Yeah, it sounds like Jonathan's trajectory is diminishing, which is worrying for all those involved.
No, I think that's good, actually.
But the big question is Sarri, as Jonathan is suggesting he could, is he gradually improving? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love
Sport. You're listening to the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd of the Chelsea Fancast, who were reliably informed will be back up and running on Twitter very shortly.
Well, if they let me out of prison, mate, I don't know what's going to happen at the moment. I'm quite worried, I have to say.
They will
let you out.
It's
a lifetime's work.
They will. We'll send the UN in. They'll sort it out. It'll be okay.
Kafofi Annan.
Quite. Oh dear.
That's a very, very good joke.
It is.
That's a politically clever joke.
Clever, very clever.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah, good.
I know, you're my number one fan. That's why I love you.
I am.
Talking of clever people, whether or not Chelsea fans like him, Sarri is a pretty sharp bloke. He was successful as a banker. He's now relatively successful as a football manager.
What's he won?
Well, different question.
I've won more trophies than he has.
What kind of trophies have you won?
Well, Football Blogging Awards twice.
Yeah, to be fair, you're right up there. It was another 2 points dropped against Burnley, but I, as an impartial observer, felt that actually there were signs there that Chelsea might be getting better, that Sarri's identity might be working with the team slightly more effectively. I thought, for example, that Kante in that higher role that's been so criticised was working, not just the goal, but he was repeatedly winning the ball back in that Burnley third.
I agree with you. I thought Kante was superb, but Kante's superb every week because Kante is a world-class player, but... He is undoubtedly the best player in the world as a defensive midfielder. So no matter how good he is playing on the right, it's still a gross misuse of his talents.
I think we would have won, though, against Burnley if he'd carried on playing.
I think they were huge, the injuries we had, actually, because they gave the side energy and dynamism, and we lost all of that when they went off, to be fair. Kovacic came on and it went about 1 mile an hour.
I'm afraid it does every time he comes on.
Indeed it does.
And they apparently might be able to extend his loan period.
God almighty, seriously?
Yeah. The news today is that the plan to dodge the transfer ban, as you're suggesting, Jonathan, is you extend the loan for another year and then automatically have to pay 26 million quid at the end.
You know, I tell you what, this is absolutely for real. You know, if they keep Kovacic and Sarri and a whole number of other issues, they do this before because they haven't announced when the season tickets are renewable yet. I tell you, loads of season ticket holders are not going to renew this year. Yeah. Loads of them.
Do you think they've taken that into consideration? I doubt it.
You can have two views on that. One is that they do care because it's good revenue. The other is that there's always a lot of people wanting to have season tickets.
Yeah, there's a waiting list.
The third cynical chidge view is that they're doing it deliberately in order to get rid of all the miserable old gits that they hate that have been supporting the club forever, so they can get tourists in. I mean, I was there on Monday and I had to meet canners for various... Well, actually, because we'd organised some tickets for those underprivileged kids, if you remember.
Yeah.
And I was hanging around by the Copthorne at about 5 o'clock, and it was like being in a theme park. It was just tourists everywhere. And that's what they love. They don't want people like me in there who don't spend a cent.
Yeah, because they're immediately going to the club shop and spend a mess, weren't they?
I mean,
well,
I joked about this on the Fans Forum show on Sunday. I said that actually the coup de grace by the club will be to sack Sarri and then hire Rafa Benitez again just to make the meltdown complete. Remember where you heard it first.
Imagine that. It wouldn't go down very well. But, Chidge, do you think that Sarri's improving? Is there a potential?
No, I don't.
No, me neither.
I don't. I really, really don't. You know, we are, no pun intended, we're at the fag end of the season. And look, we are both old enough to have seen Chelsea being appalling with some absolutely terrible players, bless their hearts, who tried their hearts out, having said that.
I'm not even sure they did.
And I remember a time when, you know, I had no hope of seeing Chelsea ever win the league, a vague hope that they might win the cup again, usually squashed in by a lower division team in the third round. But, you know, my expectations were not of winning trophies. So what happens then when you support a club that's not going to win trophies is that what you want to see year on year is improvement. And that's a really good measure. Now, I haven't seen that improvement. I mean, they played brilliantly for the first part of the season. He broke the record for wins.
In fact, we've seen deterioration.
Yeah, we have.
Ross Barkley has got worse and worse, but as has Kovacic.
Do you want to hear something really astonishingly...
positive.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, we've had more shots than ever.
No.
More goals.
I dug out the league table at the close of last season because I couldn't remember where we finished because, you know, I've got a memory like a goldfish, you know. We finished fifth. Okay, 38 games played. We won 21, drew 7, lost 10. Goals for 62, goals against 38. So the goal difference was 24. And we finished on 70 points. This year, we've got 3 games left. So we played 35. We're in fourth at the moment. We've won 20, so one less. We've drawn exactly the same, 7. We've lost 8, which is 2 less. We've scored 59, which is 3 goals less. We've conceded the same amount of goals, 38. Our goal difference is slightly lower as a result, and we've got 67 points. I mean, it's almost identical, and, you know, it could go one of two ways in the last 3 matches. It could either be better than we were doing last year, or slightly worse, but the margin of error, we've basically done exactly the same. So, in other words, we're stuck in the mud.
And we won the cup last year.
Exactly. Somebody reminded me about this on Monday, actually, Andy Willis, but we won the cup last year. So, if we don't win a trophy this year, you have to say that we've slightly regressed, but only slightly. I think the takeaway that I get from that is we're not going anywhere. That's what I think. We're not going anywhere at the moment. And that's annoying, to say the least.
So we're not going backwards, but we're not making any progress.
We is in the treacle, man.
And Liverpool and City are disappearing over the horizon.
I mean, the only consoling thing, I was kind of chatting to Johnny about this before we, you know, before we went on air, the only consoling thing at the moment, something that hopefully we'll pick up with Jason...
Jack Ranson BBC Manchester.
Jack Ranson, BBC Manchester. He's doing the opposition view. But the only consoling feature at the moment for me is that Man United, Arsenal and Chelsea are all as rubbish as each other. They're all going downhill. They're all appallingly run clubs. And they've all got similar issues.
But for Chelsea, you're spot on there and I take your point. But with Chelsea neither progressing nor regressing, is this transfer ban then a worry? Because it's very hard to get rid of Sarri with that looming.
I don't agree.
You don't think?
No, well, I think actually...
They can do what they get rid of whenever they want.
But what manager is going to come in to replace him?
Let me get there. I mean, personally, I think if we get the transfer ban, it's an absolutely pivotal moment, probably the most important year since Roman Abramovich bought the club. For me, I don't see it negatively at all, actually. I think it's a chance and an opportunity to have the reboot that we need. The perennial problem at Chelsea is that we never... transition, we never develop because, you know, we never allow a manager, ironically having been moaning about Sarri, but we never allow a manager time to build and develop the squad because the pressure is always on to finish in the top four for a business reason or to win a trophy for whatever other reasons. Personally, I think that Sarri is the worst manager to have when you can't buy any new players. I think, like, and this is no slur on him. Like all of the top elite managers, you know, they want to bring players in because that's why they go to big clubs.
Yeah, so Liverpool had asked Klopp to do a job with the squad he had when he came in. Hopeless.
Yeah, no, none of them would. So there's no point having them there. His track record is not one of somebody who brings in and develops young talent. So I wouldn't have him. You're clearly not going to get a top, you know, you're not going to get an Allegri or somebody like that because for the same reason, they're going to want to buy loads of players. They're not going to come to a club that can't buy players. So I think it allows you an opportunity to look elsewhere. And I mean, frankly, I know that there's a huge side of me that doesn't want this, but I think Frank Lampard wouldn't be a bad choice. Because
frankly.
I know. That's a clue. I was teasing it for you. But I mean, he knows the club.
Mm.
He knows the club. He's loyal to the club. And you're going to need somebody who's like that, who gets the club and is loyal to it, sticks with it for a very troubling year that it will be.
But do you risk spoiling it for Lampard if he comes in now? It's a very difficult time.
But I mean, I don't think it's a bit like, okay, you've got this beautiful Easter egg, you know, it's a work of art, right? Okay? It's not there to look at, is it?
It's there to be eaten. Are we eating it? Frank Lampard?
Well, in a metaphorical way, you know, but that's what I'm saying. You know, he's going to be manager sooner or later. The track record of Chelsea managers at the moment is that they last 18 months.
They
all end in failure, you know. Every managerial career ends in failure. But right, very few get to retire gracefully. Fergie did. You know, he jumped before he knew what was happening. So I would say, look, just bite the bullet. This is a weird time. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Chelsea. Really up in the poo because of a transfer ban. Get somebody who's loyal to the club. The fans will go absolutely ballistic. After the misery that they felt for having Sarri, they will at least have a huge lift, like Ollie did when he got made the United manager. Well, let's hope the same thing doesn't happen. But I think also the fans would be more, they'd give Frank more latitude. If it didn't work, they'd be more supportive of him. They're not going to get on his case and boo him.
But there isn't going to be a transfer ban. It'll be deferred. They'll be
well. I'm not so sure about that, mate. I am not. That's what this appeal's about. Because FIFA said no, we're not going to do that anymore.
No, I know they said that, but surely automatically that they appealed it, it'll go to the.
We don't know, do we? But the reality is, I think, you know, look, let's say it's 50-50.
Yeah.
You know, but if we have a ban, Sarri is not the man. Getting somebody else like him is not the answer. I think we have to, you know, get somebody on side who gets the club, who the supporters will give time to and patience with, just to navigate the club through some very choppy waters. And of course, the only thing that we can do with a transfer ban is to use the resources that we have, which means the youngsters. Frank and Jody know the youngsters. Jody coached half of them, or the loanees. They're all going to love Frank Lampard and respect him because, you know, what didn't he do at Chelsea? So for me, it's a good solution if we get a transfer ban.
Maybe that is the solution. Super Frank is at the wheel.
This is Love Sport. Sport.
You're listening to the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd.
You do.
And it's a doctor's surgery here on the Chelsea Fan Show for the next 9 minutes because we're joined by Dr. Chidgey, who has unlocked the secret to that Callum Hudson-Odoi injury.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's a horrible injury. That's the bottom line. And I have to say, very, very worrying. I mean, I think a lot of that's... I mean, Jonathan might agree with me here, but when we were kids, you know, when footballers got an Achilles injury, that was their game, their career over, wasn't it? Pretty much. They'd be in plaster from toe to thigh for about 6 months, and they very rarely came back. Of course, you know, 2019...
And this was 1927.
But in your case, obviously, you know. I'm talking 70s, mate. 1870s. But then look, things have moved on. It's very different now. Number one, it's all about getting it operated. If you ruptured it, which is what he did, then it's all about getting it operated on within 2 days.
And he's had that operation.
They certainly did that. There was a lot of complaints, quite right in my opinion, about him being walked around the pitch because that certainly wasn't going to do it any good. He should have really been carried off.
They clearly hadn't diagnosed it when they were doing that.
That
he thought
I find,
it was something
again,
else.
Well, yeah. I'm surprised by that because, you know, there's a very famous bit of footage when Beckham did his Achilles playing for AC Milan. And it's very... And I actually, funny enough, Mort's thing did his Achilles and I had a chat with him about it ages ago. And he described it as it's a bit like being shot in your heel or somebody's just kicked you really hard. So you get this really intense pain, sharp pain for 30 seconds, then it all goes numb and your foot doesn't work. And Bex, when he did it, he looked round to see who had kicked him. and there was nobody within yards
of it. I've played squash with somebody and it went, and they actually turned around and thought I hit them with
exactly
the racket.
Exactly
when
that.
When in fact you had.
I'd hit them over the head with the racket. I was surprised.
So there you go. So he's been operated on within 2 days and really with an Achilles. From what I read and understand, it's now all about the recovery, and the longer term effects have a lot to do with, a bit like, I mean, you know, my dear old mum got her knee replaced and it went horribly wrong because genetically she's very predisposed to creating a lot of scar tissue, which of course inhibits the movement. Mm. And, you know, it's just bad luck. If you're genetically somebody who grows a lot of scar tissue, that's going to really hamper the recovery and also the potential movement. And of course that will hamper. I mean, I think there's some footballer, I can't remember who it was now, but he said that, you know, he did have a lot of scar tissue that inhibited his movement, and he always felt like he had one leg shorter. You know, it just didn't really work again properly, and it always hampered him. And of course, you're not going to know that until he plays again.
No, concerning stuff. Hopefully,
six, seven months.
Yeah, hopefully, it won't be too awful for Hudson-Odoi. We wish him all the best. There could be a silver lining there. There could be a couple for Chelsea.
But it doesn't make him as attractive to Bayern.
Yeah, the first is that Bayern Munich are not going to come calling in the summer for a player with one leg. I think we can be pretty certain of that. But the second is that even with that looming transfer ban, and even with Real Madrid circling to swoop on Eden Hazard, might the club now go, you know what, we'll just take the 100 million quid hit. We haven't got another backup winger. Hazard is going to be absolutely crucial to this year. Let's just hang on to him.
Well, that's what I actually posited last week, if you remember when we were doing the show. I said, why don't they just hang on to him and let his contract run out?
Is that now more likely?
Oh, that's exactly what I said. And and you then said, I don't know if that's possible.
I posited it the week before.
No, you hadn't.
Oh, I did.
No, you didn't.
Oh,
I did too. Well, in which case, I posited it the week before.
Well, I posited it a year before.
No, I posited it. Anyway.
I'm agreeing with him.
But no, but also, there is another theory that, according to Pat Nevin, that he's not going.
Saw that. Well, I mean, we have both talked about it, to be fair, to Jonathan. And, you know, number one, you know, Hazard has always said he will go if Chelsea sell him to Real Madrid. He's not going to do a Courtois. He's not going to go on strike. He's not going to demand a move. The reality is he has a year left on his contract. And I agree with you, Johnny, that the decision has to be with Chelsea. And they could make the decision to just run his contract out, which case he goes to Real Madrid and pocket trousers all the money.
But also, do you think it's relevant if they do get into the Champions League? There is still the possibility, and they don't have the transfer ban, that they appreciate that the club needs to buy some decent players or change it around. So we might then have three top-class players into the fold.
Well, what if we get to the transfer ban again?
No, but if we don't have the transfer ban, there are so many ifs and buts in this and whatever.
Well, if we get the transfer ban,
it would then become attractive to him, wouldn't it, to play?
Well, look, here's the thing. If we get a transfer ban, if we don't get a transfer ban, Hazard's off. And the reason he'll be off is that we'll be able to buy a replacement. Mm. They'll say, here we go, you can have him for 100 million quid and we'll go and buy a decent player.
No, not necessarily. They might say to him, look, here you are. Would you like some more money? Would you like to carry on playing with us? Because he hasn't
made
the decision.
They offered him 400 grand a week, didn't they?
Yeah, but he still, perhaps he wants to find out whether...
I don't think he's about the money,
mate. No, perhaps he doesn't enjoy playing under Sarri.
Oh, apparently he does.
Well, hey, he must be the only one then.
But if his real dream...
I don't get it.
...is to play at Real Madrid...
Is it? Who said?
He did.
He did.
When did he say that?
Every time he opens his goal,
he has said it. No, he has. He said it a few times. He's really flirting with them. And I take your point that Chelsea will offer him everything. They'll throw the kitchen sink at him in a nice way, of course.
Gold-plated kitchen sink.
A gold-plated kitchen sink. But if he really wants to go, there's not a lot the club can do.
No, other than keep him to his contract for the year.
Well, no, but that's my point. We're not talking about...
You're saying we'd only keep him if we had the transfer ban.
Yeah, but we're not... I don't think... We are not talking about a situation like we had with Courtois, who kicked up a stink and got you know, he basically held a gun to Chelsea's head and they had to get rid of him. Hazard has always said, if the move comes off, great. If it doesn't come off, great. I love being at Chelsea. I can live with that. So I think there has to be will on both sides for this move to happen, you know, and I think that's why I say really the ball is in Chelsea's court. So hang on, if we get a transfer ban, if I'm Marina Granovskaya and we get a transfer ban, I'm saying to Eden, mate, we cannot let you go.
No, absolutely.
Because we can't buy a replacement.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. you see out the year of your contract, and we basically give you away to Madrid on a free, and we'll take that hit because we love you and it's not a problem. Mm. And I think that's all, you know, doubling down on that with Hudson-Odoi out for 6-7 months possibly, I think that makes that even more imperative.
Do you think that, on another aspect to do with Hazard, that the club have let him down by not buying enough players around him to go with his brilliance?
I absolutely do.
Because I do.
I do.
Yeah.
You know, he came in because we won the Champions League.
Yeah, he said so.
He came in because he felt that we were a club that had a chance of winning it again.
Yeah.
Since when, we've been in decline. There's no two ways about that. We've not competed in the transfer market. The quality of our squad has gone down.
Diminished.
I mean, you went on the Monday night show, but I had a list of our squad, and I went through with me and Tony and Joe Tweedy, and we said, who is good enough? That was the question. Which of these players are good enough for Chelsea? We got rid of 12 out of 13
as well. Yeah, yeah.
That's how bad the quality of this squad is at the moment compared to what it was like, say, 10 years ago.
Well, particularly under Kenyon. Kenyon said he wanted two world-class players for every
and
position.
And Eden's the only one. I mean, we've got two world-class players at the moment. One is Eden and one is N'Golo Kante. Yeah, that's it. None of the others are.
No.
Boom.
Morata, he's doing very well.
Yeah, God. Apparently some referee smacked him on the back of the head.
Was for being petulant, for being a child.
Why didn't he smack him in the face? That's what we would all do.
Why didn't he punch him in the
face? Well, indeed. Absolutely. Johnny Burrow. I feel so sorry for him. I really do.
This is how I spend my Friday nights. This is
like
how they go.
Punch and Judy.
Metaphorically.
No, I'm really here.
Oh, right.
Yeah, metaphorically. We wouldn't actually hit you, Alvaro. Any chance of him coming back?
Well, he's under...
Then we can punch him in the face. I can't wait.
You're not allowed to punch him in the face.
He could, couldn't he?
Mate, because Johnny, I couldn't reach him. He's about 6'4".
But he's on loan, isn't he?
Probably just about reaching.
Well, we could get Batshuayi back.
Exactly.
You could get Tammy Abraham in the team. You get
Victor
Mason
Moses.
Mountain. Victor Moses.
If there's a transfer ban, they'll all be
Kurt Zouma.
This is Love Sport.
I've just been told by Jonathan Kidd that he does a lot of theatrical stuff, which is what we come here for on the Chelsea Fan
on
Show.
On Twitter,
and I think in the studio sometimes. It's what we adore on the Chelsea Fan Show. We'll be talking all things Chelsea, also bringing you updates, of course, from Liverpool versus Huddersfield. We are 2 minutes in, and it's Liverpool 1, Huddersfield 0. It could be a long, long evening for the Terriers at Anfield, and if Liverpool score too many, we won't be able to talk about Chelsea at all.
No, that's not going to happen. We'll just have an exclusion zone around Liverpool, you know. Definitely.
They are, of course, very much in the title race, safe in terms of the race for top four.
You know, obviously, as most people know, I actually hate football. It's just Chelsea that I like. But I forced myself to watch another team play on Wednesday, and it was Man United versus Man City, and I tell you, the volume and excitement that was generated in my living room when City scored was almost equivalent to if Chelsea scored. And I was delighted.
I am afraid I similarly went, yes!
Oh, I said worse than that, but I was glad because I don't want Liverpool to win the title.
No, and also, from a Chelsea point of view, United dropping
points. Oh, that helped too, yeah.
It's very, very well.
Oh, great tease there, Johnny.
Because
he's a pro, mate. He's a pro.
You're all in that race for top four.
We are.
And interesting, can I just say that the under-19s have beaten Barcelona to go through to the UEFA
Youth
Cup final.
Wowzers.
Well, that means there is even a further source of possible players to bring into the side if this were a new dawn.
And if they get Frank Lampard and Jody Morrison instead of Sarri. I mean, it's all happening. I'm so excited about this. You know that we quite often moan about saying, blooming hell, this Chelsea board, they've turned us into Arsenal. Well, they've turned me into Arsenal too, because I'm now doing spreadsheets for football.
Yes.
Which is quite frightening.
I've noticed that you have become much more...
I just love this.
Of a brain.
Yeah, but do you know why I love this? Because every prediction I make goes spectacularly wrong. Yeah.
Are you also only eating steamed broccoli, which is the final form of Arsenal?
No, I don't just eat steamed broccoli.
How are you going with your the prediction that you had last Friday?
Shall I tell you?
Yeah.
Well, it depends where we go for it. Should we take the last set of results? Because, I mean... You know, I actually got this right. I had United to lose to City, but that's more in hope than expectation because I don't want Liverpool to win the title. Of course, obviously, United lost. Arsenal spectacularly let me down.
Did you have them losing to
Wolves? No, I had them drawing to Wolves and they lost.
Oh, right.
Tottenham, I knew, would beat Brighton. And as I said, City, I knew would beat United. Anyway, at the moment, I've still got it that we're not going to make top four. But there's a Rizzler paper between us and Arsenal. I mean, United, I reckon, are going to get another 7 more points and they'll finish on 71. So I've got them and us drawing on Sunday. I can't see us winning because we're just so hopeless away. But we'll get into that later. I can see them beating Huddersfield away and I can see them beating Cardiff at home because both of those teams are rubbish. But they'll finish on 71 and I've got us and Arsenal on 72. So I see us getting a draw away at United, beating Watford at home, and getting a draw away at Leicester.
Okay.
Arsenal, I actually had them to draw at Wolves and lose at Leicester. I think they could still lose at Leicester because Leicester are a decent side.
I think Leicester will do you a favour.
I think they could.
They're better under Rodgers. That's why I think I'm afraid they'll beat Chelsea in the last game of the season.
Well, that's why I've only got that down as a draw because I'm not confident about it.
No, me neither.
You know. But I agree with you, Johnny. I think Arsenal could come a cropper at Leicester, but I do think they'll beat Brighton at home. I've got them beating Burnley away, largely because I think Burnley will be on the beach by the 12th of May.
I don't know, they're a nasty.
But you see, this is the thing. Side. Yeah, but this is the thing. It's almost impossible. I mean, I'm saying we're both going to finish on 72 points, so which means it'll go down to goal difference. And at the moment, Arsenal are only, in fact, better than us. They're 23
points.
Yeah, two goals in it. So it's just impossible to predict what's going to happen because Chelsea could lose to United or beat United. They could lose, draw or beat Watford. They could lose, draw or beat Leicester. And you could say the same about Arsenal's last three.
Well,
there's no certainty in there at all.
There is no certainty and you're spot on there. But Arsenal are slightly easier to predict in the sense that their away form is comically bad. Yeah. Right? They've lost to Bate Borisov. Yeah. There are two teams they have beaten away since Christmas. One of them is Huddersfield, the other is Blackpool. So Burnley away and Leicester away, from an Arsenal fan's perspective, look absolutely terrifying.
I could see you losing both of those because, you know, Leicester will rip you apart, Burnley will beat you up.
Yeah. You know, and Arsenal can't handle either of those conditions.
And Brighton could just sit there and park the bus and stop you scoring. So that you might not even win that. So, but you could, as I said, equally, Chelsea.
Beat Brighton 4-0.
Well, yeah, but Chelsea equally could lose each one of those three matches. You know, United at home are never easy, and they really going to lose three in a row? I find that hard to believe, even if the wheels have fallen off. Watford, they could either be on the beach, or they're going to have one eye on the FA Cup, or they're going to want to prove that they want to get into the side, so they could beat us. All very difficult. So I really don't know what to predict. So at the moment, I'm sitting on the fence, saying we're basically both going to have 72 points, and it'll be down to goal difference, Jonathan.
Yes,
indeed. Do you know the other thing I found out? That's some brilliant stuff, actually. This is on Rick's pre-match briefing on the Chelsea website. But, in terms of we were comparing the league table positions year on year and saying how similar it is to last season. In fact, Rick's got our last 10 finishes and number of points we've got for the last 10 seasons. And it's really interesting to see if any patterns are emerging. And of course, my theory, which is we stopped spending money properly in about 2013, which is true. It's kind of weird to try and figure out what impact it had, because beforehand we from 2008 till 2013 we were third, first, second, sixth, third. All right, so the blip was the AVB year when we won the Champions League. Since then we've been third, first, tenth, first, fifth. So again, there's no pattern emerging other than the fact that we won the title twice in the last 5 years.
But don't you think that it's the irregularity of the pattern that has actually made the board so inactive?
Exactly.
Because they think, well, perhaps Sarri will do something with this base metal and make it into gold.
I don't know. But I mean, again, if you look at the points, when Mourinho won, Mourinho came third in 2014, 82 points. First in 2015 with 87 points. Then 10th with 50 points. And then Conte comes in and we got 93 points, which is just staggeringly brilliant. That's going back to Mourinho Mark 1 days. And then last year we had 70 points. But on the other hand, in 2011 under Carlo, we finished second with 71 points. So also it shows you how much better the other teams are in the league, because 70 points, that was 28 points behind City, or 30 points behind City, in fact, who won it last year.
So it's unlikely that any creativity from the manager is going to actually cause success. You could actually deduce.
But no, I think if it reveals anything, it's that if you get a spectacularly good manager who takes the pragmatic view and gets the best out of the players, yeah, like Conte did, you can achieve remarkable things, albeit, of course, we had no Europe and, you know, the others kind of, you know, did screw it up a bit that year. But if you don't, like Sarri's doing, you can really become a cropper because the other sides are spending more money, are, you know, have, like Tottenham, Liverpool and City.
Other than Tottenham, of course.
No, but they've had time together. They've kind of, you know, got their methodology across. If you, you know, these are established,
perhaps
developed sides.
The board are thinking that with Sarri. Perhaps they're thinking if he keeps these players together, they might.
Yeah,
end
but
up...
if that's the case, why do they put the squeeze on and say if you don't finish in the top four or win a trophy, we're going to fire you? Because that's we don't know for a fact. We don't know for a fact. But really, between the lines, that nothing's changed there.
It is interesting though that at the end of even the end of Conte's first season, he demanded that the board then spent some
money.
As did Mourinho, and of course they wouldn't.
And this goes right back to the point that we were talking about just before the break, which is qualitatively, this is probably the weakest squad Chelsea have had in the Roman Abramovich era. Mourinho was pointing that out. Conte was pointing that out. I don't think Sarri's really complained as much as they have, though.
Interestingly, under Carlo, Abramovich wanted, because of the success of the academy even then, he wanted more youth put into the team. Mm. And Carlo attempted to do so and came a cropper.
Yeah.
And so you wonder whether now, what are we, 8 years on from that, whether in fact Abramovich might say, OK, we'll try the youth again,
but I don't
with
see
a different
them doing
manager.
That. But I don't see them doing that because I think somewhere along the line, and I think this is where, you know, this is where you can compare us to Arsenal and certainly United. The business is wagging the football. You know, the business tail is wagging the football dog. You know,
and yet they have to be successful.
They want
for
to finish
the
in the top. Well,
that,
they have to finish in the top four. That's what makes the business model work. You know, Champions League football, elite club, blah blah blah. Sell shirts to New Lambertor, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Because I you know, this is why I say that if we get a transfer ban, it could be just what we need. Because if they expect to finish in the top four and win a trophy when we can't buy any players, when all the other sides are going to move on, they're nuts, frankly. They really are. So the sensible thing management-wise to do is to say, OK, don't worry about where you finish this season. Just don't get relegated. But this is the year, you know, we go back to year zero, we bring some of the youth in, we try and make the best of what we've got, and see what we can develop in that year to prepare us for the next year when we can add some real quality and world-class players.
Yes, I suppose it becomes the business plan is put on
hold.
Has
to take a back seat.
Yeah, it's put on hold because of the situation.
So if that's the case, make the most out of a bad situation by bringing arguably the greatest ever player that's played for Chelsea, who is loved universally by the players.
You're going to bring Baba Rahman back?
No, Winston Bogard. Winston Bogard. No, but if you hired Frank, you see, it would give all the supporters around the world such a lift.
And they would forgive him finishing.
They would, yeah. It'd be
17th.
A smart thing to do. It'd be clever. This is why I should be running the club.
Yeah.
You know, Raymond, you've got my number. Sort it out.
Now we've got this assessed, I'm going to go and ask my sources at the club.
Blue squirrel?
No.
Blue underpants?
No, my blue thong.
Blue
actually.
Thong, that's right. I knew I'd get there at the end.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to ask, as blue thong, my sources as to what the business plan aspect, what they would do. Would they shoulder it? No, the wrong expression. Hide it away? What would they? They would.
What do you mean?
They would pack it. Well, are they willing to give it up if there's a transfer ban?
Well, I'm saying. I think you know there is a look.
Now, I know you're saying it. I'm going to ask somebody.
Yeah,
in position,
but there is another side.
Yeah,
but there's another side to this, and that's, you know, once you get to a certain level, you get economies of scale as a club. So, you know, once you're in that elite bracket, it takes quite a while for you to fall out of that. Okay, in terms of losing revenue. So I think they could sustain a year where it goes completely Pete Tong, and they'll still get people wanting to be interested in Chelsea and buying shirts around the world and all of that lot. And if you know, sprinkle some stardust a la Frank Lampard on there,
even more so,
I think you'll still keep up there. Although I was hearing the other day on another radio station, Matt Scott was going on about, I mean, he hates Chelsea because he's a big Arsenal fan, but he was going on saying that the corporate boxes have been empty for like the last 5 years has been tough on Chelsea selling out the corporate boxes and things like that, and that's hitting revenue. Now, I don't know because I've not checked that, but what I can tell you, I sit opposite that like you do, and they haven't looked that full for a while, it has to be said, JK.
Oh.
You know, They haven't, so maybe he's right.
But as you've said many a time, Chidge, that shouldn't be the point of a football club. And for the fans, the focus is going to be on the footballing side of things.
Corporate match day revenue is 8% of total revenue. People like me is 8% of total revenue. You know, 16% of total revenue is quite marginal in the bigger scheme of things. They're more interested in sponsorship deals and growing the club globally. That's where they make their money.
And the easiest
and TV
way,
revenue.
The easiest way of growing the club globally is Champions League qualification.
Yeah, that's why it's so important.
And in order to get that, they're going to have to get points against United this weekend. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd of the Chelsea Fancast. It's United up next, and does the entire season boil down to this? Is it a cup final for a Champions League place?
Yes and no, Johnny. Yes and no. It's really impossible to answer, isn't it? Because if you go back to what we were saying before, you know, Chelsea could win, lose or draw any of their last three matches, and so could Arsenal. So, you know, even if we lose to United on Sunday, ultimately it's up to how, you know, rubbish Arsenal are, really. You know, we could win our last two matches, they could screw up, and we'll still get into top four. I think from a Chelsea support, you know, forget the league table, forget this kind of obsession with finishing in the top four. Who cares anyway? We don't get a trophy for it. I think from a supporter's point of view, we absolutely, completely and utterly need to beat the hell out of United on Sunday. Because remember, we've not beaten anybody in the top six away this season. That is, in fact, actually, oh my God, Rick Glanville stat alert. I've got somewhere, I think this is the, there we go.
This will be the first time we've
yeah,
lost to all
here we
of
go.
Them.
No, I've got it.
Since 1907.
Exactly. How did you know that? Yeah. No, I don't know if that's true. I can't remember. I can't find the stat typically. But the bottom line is that we, I think it's the first time we won't have beaten anybody in the top six since even before the Roman Abramovich era started.
Right.
So, you know, it's really important for as a supporter to just have to restore some belief.
Do you think that's because of the kind of football that Sarri plays? Do you think he invites a top side to get at him, play round the press?
I mean,
and
I
just
don't think you can say that there's any consistency recently with the type of football he plays, because occasionally they play defensively and break. Occasionally they're pushed back. Occasionally he will try and play what appears to be pure Sarrismo when they all have to rush into position and get rid of the ball after about 30 seconds. And then the major problem all the fans have when and which I've always objected to this view, which is that all they play tippy-tappy football with no end product, whereas the reality from where I've seen it is they don't have enough players who can shoot properly, and they don't set the centre forward up, so they're not actually playing the way he wants to play. And that's why I'll always defend that aspect of it. But they've been put off by what they call the ball being tipped and tapped around the edge of the penalty area, and there being no shots on goal or no goals. And the reality is that the players aren't good enough to shoot to do it. He's got Kovacic playing in the middle who cannot shoot at all. I am so bemused as to how on earth he's ended up with a career, considering that, you know, he passes pretty well. He can play the ball 30 to 40 yards. Why can he not shoot? It is a complete joke. He winds up.
What, Higuain?
And no, we're talking about Kovacic. No, Higuain wanders around like an old
scored
bloke.
A great goal against
it
Burnley,
was a
though.
Great goal. And you suddenly thought, and there was a very strange picture of him by the corner flag with a crease in his shorts. We were all rather worried about, weren't we? Yes.
Did he have his blue thong on?
I don't think he could have kind of had it on. He's been such a disappointment. It's that aspect of that's for me. That's why all the supporters have been put off, because of this, what they think is, and also players not being allowed to give any passion with it. It's a very passionless yeah. style of football. So you're not playing any. There's no personality
there's no
in
spontaneity.
It.
Spontaneity.
There's no. Indeed. No, indeed.
Do you know Seb? I keep going on about this guy, the wonderful @SebC on Twitter, who's French, obviously.
But, yeah, I've seen him, yes.
But he's also, you know, got all his coaching badges. He really knows his onion. Johnny clearly follows him as well. But he says this all the time. And the trouble with a lot of these Italian managers and their methodology is it's all about, you know, it's a bit like the NFL. It's all about predetermined patterns of play.
Yeah.
So put these poor old players all thinking, oh, hang on, what am I supposed to be doing in this minute, in this part of the position? You know, and I think a lot of, you know, particularly older fans, the ones that have not played FIFA, which is played like that, people of my generation, your generation, we grew up with watching people do amazingly clever, spontaneous things. You know, just like George Best, you know, pick the ball up, run with it, do something brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we like. You know, that's what we think is attractive football.
It's completely anti it, but I suppose the thing is why I was...
I think the other's stifling.
Why I haven't reacted as hugely as everybody else is I could see what he was trying to do.
And this was my big
thing all the way through the season, was I was forgiving because I could see he's trying to get them to do that and they're not managing it. I never had the reaction that Dan and Tony had, which was that he needs to be thrown out. He's useless.
This I think is, you know, lies at the heart of it. You know, because that's the reaction you're getting from everybody who's, you know, plus 5-10 years either side of my age.
Why am I such an old git?
You're just a bit more reasonable. But the visceral reaction is because it threatens everything that we know and love. If football is reduced to a series of predetermined patterns, then what's the game? That's why I think they have such a violent reaction to
it. But I suppose what I'm hoping is that they would get into those patterns, but then, express themselves as only they can as individuals. So even though the individuality is being taken out of them, you then allow them to express themselves in a way that makes them playing it differently.
Well,
so they've got
very
that
much
pattern
the Pep
imposed.
Model. The Pep model is that if you listen to Thierry Henry speak about what it was like playing under Pep at Barca, it's very, very prescriptive until you get into the final third, at which point it's just...
Do what you like.
Do what you like, lads. Have a go. And we are seeing that work quite well, which is a balance of the, taking the individuality out and also we're maximising that individuality as well.
But it seems to me also that why he's let me down to an extent is the idiocy occasionally of his inability to make it work, as you said, Chidge, within the game itself.
Goal.
So you have...
Liverpool 2, Huddersfield 0, Mane header.
So you have Chelsea having 43 crosses in the Burnley game.
Yeah.
And he's got two enormous players, a centre-half from Burnley, and it's food and drink.
I know. And yet, normally we'd moan that they weren't crossing the ball at all.
No,
I just think there's... Look, it seems to me that there's such a complete and utter disconnect between, what Sarri wants from the players and what the players understand or are trying to give. But either way, I think it leaves a lot of us feeling rather kind of meh about it, but there you go.
It's a lovely goal from Liverpool to put them 2 up, across from the left from, of course, Robertson, headed beyond the Huddersfield keeper very, very confidently by Sadio Mane. It's impossible to call, but if I had to put you both on the spot and say who you think will win the Premier League title as things stand, who would you go
for? Well, I have to say City, because otherwise I'm going to emigrate to Iceland.
And you, JK?
Yeah, City will win it. Yeah.
Straightforward.
Yeah. They just win all their games.
I tell you what, Burnley worries me in terms of what matches that they've got coming up. That really does worry me, because Burnley are just...
Burnley City?
Yeah.
Because
Burnley could just kind of do a real,
they'll find a way.
Do a naughty on them.
No, they won't.
Bully them and intimidate them.
No, they won't. They'll win.
They tried that against City in the past, City find a way to get it.
And they're safe thanks to the draw with us, so maybe they'll just put their feet up now. Let's hope so.
Yeah, hopefully.
Rogers might try and screw it up as an ex-Liverpool manager.
He might. He might do it. That would be quite fitting, wouldn't it? Doing them a favour all those years later. Coming up, we'll be looking ahead to United. And will we see Sarri operate with a false nine once again? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
Eden Hazard is a fantastic footballer, but is he wasted at false nine? He's been played there a few times this season, with Sarri perhaps not putting his faith in the likes of Olivier Giroud and Gonzalo Higuain. But will we see Hazard lead the line against United?
The reason he plays him there is because it gives him more players in midfield, so it becomes defensive because he's not then playing with an out-and-out... striker, and it gives him an opportunity to play. Before it was to play Odoi, but so it'll just be he'll play Pedro again.
But I'm sorry, again, it's just like I don't understand this. Why neuter your only, Hazard has contributed about half of Chelsea's goals either directly or through an assist this season. He's the one chap we've got who can turn a match, win it on his own. Why neuter your best outlet? It just doesn't make any sense.
Beggars belief, doesn't it?
It does. That's the, why? No wonder people are doing their nutting about it. I mean, really, it's just... play Giroud, for God's sake.
I think we've established it doesn't work. But
it doesn't work. Play, I don't know what Liam was talking about.
He'll play Higuain before.
Liam was thinking it was a good idea because he said that would be more threatening to United. But the point is United are so rubbish at defence. They've got Phil Jones, Chris Smalling, Ashley Young and Luke Shaw. I mean, they're rubbish. Rubbish, mate.
Shaw was good in that 11-match winning streak.
Yeah, but I remember a defence of the likes of Dennis Irwin, Gary Neville, Rio Ferdinand, you know, the Terminator. Remember him? You know, the Serbian they had, Vidic. You know, compared to those kind of players, that is a rubbish United defence.
They're a bit harder, aren't they, as well? There's a kind of
tenacity. Well, Smalling's dirty. He's like all arms and legs everywhere in your face. Yeah, but they're rubbish.
Vidic, you always thought, oh, dear.
Nasty piece of work.
Yes,
really good defence.
So.
The only player that ever absolutely tore him inside out was Torres, of course. You know, so compared to those kind of players, this is a rubbish United defence. So why play a false nine? Play Giroud. He'll get some mileage out of them.
Well, it depends how he goes into it. You know, let's we hope the backroom staff will have done some kind of analysis. But the way they played against Burnley, well, there's not a great deal to. Suggest there's evidence for that.
I mean, the interesting thing about this is that, you know, you could argue that the weaknesses of both sides are in the defence. You know, because United, you know, they've got some decent attacking players.
It'd be interesting to see what team he chooses, actually, because he was criticised, wasn't he, for the strange... He played Darmian, didn't he, in the last one? It was a strange choice.
I mean, Lukaku...
And he didn't play Martial, And Lukaku always seems to play quite well against
us. He ups his game a bit.
He does.
You know... But I still don't rate him. I think he's a flat-track bully. Rashford I like. I think he's a good player.
But he hasn't been playing well recently. He played much better against City, actually. Yeah. He looked quite good.
Yeah.
But as I say, I think if they go for us in the first 20 minutes, I think it's going to be...
Well, that's the worry, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I tell you what, really... I mean, there's two issues, I think, here. One is that Kante's a doubt at the moment.
Yeah.
He's not a certainty
really
to play.
Rudiger should be back, shouldn't he?
But, I mean, if we don't have Kante, you could argue that, you know, he's bound to bring in Kovacic... So at least, while Kovacic is about as useful as a chocolate teapot, at least he brings a bit of solidity to the midfield. Because, you know, the midfield with Jorginho in it, you can go through it like a knife through butter. But, of course, I think the biggest issue for me is the fact that Rudiger's likely to be back. And he's the one... I mean, you know, we really missed him against Burnley.
Yeah.
Because he's a leader.
He mixes it.
And he gets in there. Yeah.
And that's the point. Despite not being on the pitch, he was very much involved against Burnley. And he was very much mixing it. Because at the end of the game,
he scuffled
well into it with the handbags, which obviously we can't praise live on radio. But actually, as a Chelsea fan, particularly as we come towards the end of the season, it's high stakes, it's high drama, it's high tempo... high pressure. He's the kind of player who will scrap.
It's good to see him in there, with his boxing gloves and his shorts.
And his blue G-string.
Yeah.
Hopefully he behaves himself. He will certainly be involved. Well, hopefully be involved. As you say, I think it will be a stronger Chelsea defence if he is. But how will United look to get at it? In just a moment, we'll be asking Jack Ranson of BBC.
This is Love Sport.
The Manchester. That's right, it's that time of the show when we turn our attentions to Chelsea's next opponents. Coming up, it is, of course, Manchester United. And I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Jack Ranson of BBC Manchester. Evening, Jack. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Are United's defence as rubbish as we've been told so far on the Chelsea Fan Show?
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Hey!
However bad you say it is, it's probably just as bad. Yeah, it's not been a good season at all. 50 goals conceded, worst record for Manchester United in the Premier League. So
I think it's worse since 1962, isn't it? Somebody was I was reading.
It's the worst run of form since 1962. Yes, yeah. You know, so seven defeats in nine, isn't it now? So the only thing you can say really in potential sort of defence of Manchester United, or I guess from an optimistic point of view, is that they need to start winning at some point, because the worse it gets, you know, the higher the pressure cranks up and the more people start, you know, clamouring for this kind of change. So you think, you know, watching them against Everton and Manchester City, there isn't any kind of that kind of resurgence, but at some point they have to turn it around.
Here's the thing, you know, everybody's been asking this all week, really. Did United jump the gun making Ole the permanent manager?
I mean, it seemed a bit strange. I know it's obviously easy to say that in hindsight, but it did. Even at the time, it seemed a bit odd because things were going so well. And, you know, in my personal opinion, it seemed that actually, you know, it was good to have it on a sort of game-by-game basis. You almost thought that was helping the players and helping Ollie. You know, it's sort of, they could just take it one game at a time, weren't entirely sure, you know, on the long-term future, but that was okay because it was working. I suppose, you know, there might be things behind the scenes which meant they had to make this decision, you know, to contract negotiations. That's what everyone's been saying is the reason. So you can perhaps understand that. But yeah, it certainly seems in hindsight like they've made the decision rushed. I still think, though, he'll get time. He'll get at least a summer to rebuild, because everyone acknowledges, I think now, even the Manchester United hierarchy would probably acknowledge now that change needs to happen in terms of personnel.
We were talking about this earlier on, actually, all three of us, and it's bizarre if you look at the similarities between what's going on with both Chelsea, you know, and United, and actually to a degree Arsenal, to be fair. But you know, is it the squad not being good enough? Is it their attitude? Johnny tells me every week, you know, well, you know, Chelsea players just chuck it in, you know, they don't play for, you know, they try and get the manager out. But, and I'm seeing this happening at United, and we giggled when it was Mourinho because we kind of thought we'd sent him up there to do just that. But there's remarkable similarities, and the thing is, I keep saying that actually the heart of the matter, the big problem is with the boards, both at both clubs, you know, Woodward at United and, you know, the bunch we've got at Chelsea, not buying good enough players, looking at it more as a business model than a football club. Do you think there's a case to be made there?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, really, you've sort of said it. I mean, again, when they appointed Solskjaer, it seemed odd to me that they didn't appoint anyone above him in terms of director of football, sporting director first. You know, you'd think if you're planning for the future, and if you're thinking about, right, okay, this is a big rebuilding job, which it realistically it is. You would think, well, we've got to have someone in place to look at the strategy, the vision overall for longer term, and then we can appoint the manager permanently. And you just think, well, none of that happened. So, I mean, ultimately, the board and whoever's in charge has to take responsibility for that. And in the case of Manchester United, yeah, it's one man. So
does Fergie ever have much influence still, do you think, in this situation? Might he have pushed for Solskjaer?
I would imagine he does. I would imagine he does. He's there quite, you know, he's there all the time. You know, went out to Barcelona, he's been at all the games recently. You would imagine that he does. The thing is, and I guess as well, this was a positive at the start, perhaps now turning into a negative for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. You know, he is a pupil of Ferguson, and he's, you know, he said he doesn't even park in his car parking space.
Still calls him boss, sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Still calls him boss. At the start, you know, that seemed like great. You know, it seemed great because it's back to United way and all that kind of stuff. But now, as it goes on, you kind of feel like he needs to figure out his own identity and you know, look forward for Manchester United, because they're looking back. And it was, you know, I think it was against Barcelona when seven of the starting 11 were Ferguson signings. And you just think, well, that's you know, that's not a good sign for a club that's looking forwards and trying to be modern. And you really, really saw it against Manchester City, the difference between a modern 21st century club and a club that maybe just haven't figured out, you know, what they look like in 2019.
And Jack, arguably one of the biggest symbols of United's looking back is Paul Pogba, a man who they let go, then went, hang on a minute, and re-signed. He's been all over the back pages this week after his inclusion in the PFA Players Team of the Year. Various people not delighted about that. Do you think people's scepticism is justified? We've seen the percentage of walking stat. So walking is not generally a stat we talk about a lot in football, but it's been revealed
They're not that old, are they? I mean, walking football, Johnny.
Well, Pogba, nominally the all-action, dynamic central midfielder, the star man who's at the heart of everything United do, has walked more than any of the Premier League's central midfielders this season. He spends 64% of his time on the pitch strolling about. That's top of all 79. Do you think he's lazy? Do you think he's talentless? And do you think he deserves to be in that Team of the Year?
Well, Team of the Year, I think he's got lucky, to put it nicely. I think he's got lucky with the timing of the vote. Because that was, you can pretty much figure out that the players voted on that around when he went through his purple patch, when Ollie took over. Because he did, you know, he did play very, very well. And actually, you can really trace United's form and where it spiked, and then since when it's dropped, on a line which probably is similar to Paul Pogba's form and his contribution. So, you know, it's clear that he's very, very talented. You would probably have to question what has made his form dip so dramatically. You know, in the last 10 games, he's not been involved in any goals other than the two penalties he scored against West Ham. And obviously, prior to that, you know, he was banging them in and also firing in the assists in the 14 or so games previously under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So you have to question what has changed, because nothing on the outside has changed. You know, he's still got the same players around him. He's still got the same manager. So where he's had his head turned, you know, it does lead you to that conclusion, doesn't it? It has to. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's a very good player. I don't think he's necessarily lazy. I think when you watch him, it looks more like frustration more than anything. So
do you think that's
whether...
frustration at the players around him? I mean, something we talk about a lot on this show is whether Chelsea have let Hazard down by failing to surround him with similarly talented players. Do you think United are possibly guilty of the same thing?
Well, yeah, you do think that. When you watch him and you watch his body language, you think, actually, does he respect the players that he's playing with? Does he think, actually, I'm better than this?
He doesn't have that problem with France, does he? You can see that he really loves playing with all the players
around
him.
Yeah, but you see, he thinks himself, as a big fish in a small pond at United, whereas in, you know, with France, it's the other way around.
Old Trafford is quite a big pond, though.
No, I think in terms of the quality of the players. The quality of the players. When he's playing for France, he's not the best player in that team by a country mile. But when he's at United, I think he thinks he is. Mm. And I think that's half the problem, Jack. What do you think?
I would agree. I think, you know, and to be fair to him, I mean, a lot of that midfield need replacing. You know, he is... But then also, you've got to flip it and you've got to think, well, why, you know, why hasn't someone had a word with him or stopped him from thinking like that? You know, against Wolves in the Premier League, when Manchester United lost, you know, Scott McTominay was the real shining light in a poor Manchester United team. And Paul Pogba was just sort of throwing his arms around, shrugging his shoulders. And Scott McTominay was the one who was sort of saying, come on, you know, and trying to drive his team forwards. And you think, well, if Paul Pogba is a world-class player, and, you know, if he's going to have all the attributes to make him a leader, as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer referred to him today, then surely he should be the one doing that rather than sulking because he doesn't think the players around him are good enough. But I do understand, you know, it's not the same, is it, playing with Pirlo and the like at Juventus and then coming to Manchester United and playing alongside, you know, I guess Nemanja Matic at this stage of his career is...
Phil Jones. You know. But he would be the one I would choose, Jack.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Jack, the biggest question of all, of course, is how the game will go at the weekend. If I had to press you for a score prediction, what would you go for?
Oh, dear. Well, I predicted Manchester United to win against Everton and I predicted them to win in the Manchester derby. So I've been a bit stung twice in the last week by Manchester United. So to be honest, I actually think it might play out into a draw. A score draw, if I can. Just because, you know, we've not been convinced by any of those three sides chasing the top four at the moment.
No, you can say that again.
You know, it's not a race, is it?
It's a jog. Paul Pogba's walking and he's in the lead.
Yeah. I think perhaps a draw is the most likely outcome. But yeah, Manchester United really, really need a performance on Sunday. I think
they finally need to step up.
The stakes, the stakes are big for Manchester United and for a lot of the players as well, because they'll be playing for a place next season potentially, you think.
They raised their game in the Bridge, United, because I didn't think they were playing particularly well before that. I think they do that with Chelsea. There's a kind of there's a rivalry between the fans as well, and I think that it seems to stoke the players up. I always get impressed by how United seem to go up a notch, which they shouldn't need to really, because it's such a good traditional top game. But I personally think that, as I said so early in the show, that if United play with as much energy as they played in the first half against City, which I thought they were impressive in the first half. They really put it in City's faces. Then I think that they'll take Chelsea to the cleaners. Actually, I think they'll score two goals. Now whether in fact they'll manage to sustain that into the second half, I don't know. I'm feeling quite negative about it personally. I think.
They've looked very, very poor going behind. Is the only thing. So yeah, I mean, if Chelsea score early, then you wonder, you know, what kind of reaction Manchester United are going to give.
Similarly, I think if it was 2-0 and Chelsea then scored, I think it might end up a draw, actually.
Yeah. But like you mentioned the game at Stamford Bridge, and that's, I was thinking about that earlier, and it seems like an absolute different world. And I know it wasn't that long ago, but it does absolutely seem completely different. You know, that Manchester United team were on an incredible run. And the energy, the positivity, there was nothing, that seemed to be able to get in their way. So I think it is a very, very different occasion this time round. Like you say, the pace, the energy of the Manchester United counter-attack is the only thing that might give the United fans some hope that they could get something this weekend. But, you know, it's trying times
indeed for both clubs, Jack, and as you say, it's a massive occasion for both of them. Thanks ever so much for your time. Lovely to speak to you. Jack Ranson there of BBC Manchester, talking of a need for pace, for power, for directness. Liverpool are showing all of that in the Premier League as we speak. They're 2-0 up, they're cruising against Huddersfield, and it looks like they could add a couple more. Updates for you from that, of course, throughout the show. And coming up, we've heard the United line on things, but how should Chelsea approach the game?
This is Love Sport.
Chelsea fan show here on Love Sport Radio. I said there could be another Liverpool goal, and there was one immediately. It's Liverpool 3, Huddersfield 0.
Boo!
Mo Salah getting it. He's now got 20 Premier League goals, two seasons running. But he is, of course, a one-season wonder. Liverpool looking very, very comfortable.
Jeez, quiz,
and a cheat.
The quiz, cheat.
Oh, you want the quiz?
The quiz. We know the quiz now.
Yeah, but should we do the quiz now?
Where are you nominally from?
I don't know.
Moment?
It's a strange
from Barcelona.
Voice. Yeah, no, I don't know.
He's not just, nothing.
No, he's a kind of squeaky somewhere voice.
He's just weird, mate. Haven't you figured that out yet?
Surely not.
Yeah.
Surely
okay, not. I'm going to do the quiz because then we can concentrate on talking about United versus Chelsea this Sunday. Just to tell you a little bit, actually, because we had, as always, a great little response from people. As always, Eddie McCready's Blue and White Army, or also known as the Lovely Mark, I think pretty much got a full house. Phil James was first to respond. I think he got a full house as well.
It's very impressive.
Yeah, it was. I've got to be honest, the easier one than normal, because this is fresher in the memory.
Mm. Go back to 1916.
No, exactly. I mean, just to remind people, who are the last 10 Chelsea players to score against Man United? So you don't have to go too far back. Plus the fact, if you want to cheat, it's pretty easy to find out the answer. Whereas,
but our listeners would never cheat, Chich.
I don't know. I would. So in fact, I already am. Because Mark's asked me one back, and I've been cheating while I've been talking to you and Jack and people trying to find the answers.
Dastardly.
So I'm basically a cheat. You know, I'm just a professional, mate. Anyway, the answers are, and I'm going to do this not necessarily in game order, but I'll try and keep it in game order. The most recent is Antonio Rudiger. Well, it could be Barkley, actually. But anyway, Antonio Rudiger and Barkley both scored in the 2-2 in October.
Barkley was last minute.
Yeah, so there you go. Barkley was is the most recent then. And this is where it gets complicated, because Eden Hazard is one of the 10, but he's actually scored 1, 2, 3 goals
in that time frame. So
it's quite telling, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, he scored in the cup final, of course, in 2018. He scored in the 4-0 in 2016, and he scored the only goal in the 1-0 in 2015. Willian scored in February 2018 in the 2-1 defeat up at Old Trafford. Morata scored the only goal in the 1-0 win in November 2017. N'Golo Kante, he scored, of course, in the only goal in the FA Cup quarterfinal in 2017, and he also scored in the 4-0, wonderful 4-0, against Jose's team, wasn't it, as I recall. We absolutely embarrassed them that day. That was October 2016. Pedro also scored in the 4-0, as did Gary Cahill. And Diego Costa scored in the 1-0 in February 2016. And finally, Didier Drogba equalised, I believe, from a wonderfully offside position in the 1-1 in October 2014.
It's quite a list.
Yeah, good. Well done, Chad. Chelsea Chad is now doing the quizzes. It's much better.
But who played for both United and Chelsea?
We've moved on.
Go back to the podcast we did about 6 months ago and you'll find the answer to that. Okay. Amazing.
It hasn't changed then?
No.
Okay.
No. Still Lukaku.
Just him, was it?
Lukaku, Matic.
Who was that? Donaghy.
Maldonaghy. Yeah. Good shout. Paul Parker.
Paul Parker.
But we've done that one.
Yeah,
JK.
We have. Well, I now got it right, though.
I know. If you went back and listened to it, you'd actually get all of them right. You'll probably find
The big question, of course, is who will be the next goal scorer for Chelsea against United? Do you think we'll see one at the weekend?
No.
You're really negative this week, Jonathan.
Yeah, completely.
You're having absolutely none of it.
No.
You're going to get battered.
Going to lose 3-0.
Oh, Jonathan.
Yeah, no.
Mate, you know what you should have done? You should have had a sound bed of the Smiths. Heaven knows I'm miserable now. I mean, we've got Jack on there. I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about United from a United perspective in such a negative frame.
Oh, hang on. If you want Jack being sad, to be fair,
A typical Manc then?
No. He's a cheery guy. He's a lovely guy. He's a funny guy. Yeah. But he also, his big role is he runs the BBC's The Wanderer podcast for Bolton. And he's come on and talked Bolton with me before. And because that is a really sorry state of affairs. Seeing that they could go out of existence in the next couple of weeks.
They're playing tomorrow, though, aren't they?
Well, if they can persuade the players don't strike, to turn up because they're striking, because they've not been paid. No. And when he was talking about that, I tell you, I was almost in tears.
Wow. There you go. Heaven knows I'm miserable now. You're very negative, old fruit.
The tears of a clown.
Well, okay, if you prefer.
Am I negative?
Strange man.
Am I negative?
No, you are negative. No, we're going to get beaten 3-0.
No, we will. I don't see us winning any of the games in the last 3 years.
But you're not negative.
Not necessarily.
Well, how can that not be negative?
I'm positive about the team most of the time.
That's a double negative, then.
Yeah, but I just...
Two wrongs don't make a right,
Chelsea is so bad, they come back in at the other end of good, perhaps.
Yeah, but also I think if they then win, I won't be disappointed.
I see. Well, look... I'm going to go back. Funnily enough, what Jack said, even though he sounded even more negative than Jonathan, I'm with him on that. I think we will draw. I think it'll be a score draw. I just can't bring myself to say that, you know, no matter how poor United are, we've just been so poor away from home this year, especially against the top six, that I can't see us winning, and that's quite depressing in itself. I'll tell you what we need to do if we are going to win, though. Hopefully that they will play De Gea in goal. We need to be shooting from everywhere
and anywhere, whatever angle.
Whenever we get the ball in our own penalty box, we need to go, shoot!
But then if he plays Kovacic, that's not going to... It'll hit
the
corner flag.
You know, even a broken clock's
right
twice a day.
Even if he plays Jorginho, it's unlikely he'll have many shots.
But I do think they need to shoot. I certainly also do think we have got to not play Hazard in the false nine. It's just...
But also,
he
mustn't play
Higuain
then.
Do it.
Why doesn't he ever bring Higuain and Giroud on together?
Because he plays 4-4, I almost went 4-3-3. Almost went a bit Mike Bassett then, but we got a dump button. It's all right. But no, I mean because he won't change. But I would play Giroud because Giroud will cause Smalling
havoc.
And Jones, you know, trouble.
Yeah.
But actually, the person who will cause United most trouble is Hazard, cutting in from the left and absolutely exposing Phil Jones for the useless lump of lard that he is. Frankly,
yeah, that's true, actually.
That's what we need to do, and I think they need, you know, this is, I think the whole outcome depends on the mentality that Sarri brings to it. Sarri's got to set this team up to win and attack United. You know, they are as weak and vulnerable as we are at the moment. I would say arguably even more so.
But he doesn't seem to be able to do that with teams. He doesn't look at teams' vulnerabilities very well. He seems very obsessed with playing the way that he wants to play.
Yeah, I know.
And it's, of course, not just United he's got to worry about, because there is also the small matter of Eintracht Frankfurt on the horizon in the Europa League. They're a team who don't have very many frailties and do have some serious attacking strength of their
own. Firstly, I think we'll win.
Do you?
Yeah.
So you're being positive now, Jonathan.
Yeah, because we're playing in the Europa League and we seem to do whatever. He won't choose the strongest side. And therefore they will play with more freedom and they'll get a result.
I hate to disagree with my honourable friend.
Surely not.
But I think the Frankfurt match is a way tougher match than the United match.
Yeah, but I still think that they'll get through it because he'll play a different side completely.
Well, I'm not so sure, and the reason I'm not so sure is that, as always in Europe, Frankfurt have had another day more to recover. I think they play Hertha Berlin on Saturday afternoon, tomorrow afternoon in the Bundesliga.
I don't think it's about recovery. The players playing on for us in a game we won't have played at all on Sunday.
Yeah, but the salient point is that they've got Rebic, who's that Croatian, who's very, very good.
Luka Jovic,
who's the most sought-after striker in Europe, who's on fire, who could make mincemeat of Chelsea. But also, they are a very attacking side. They will be, without doubt, the best side we've faced so far in the Europa League. And most of them have been pub teams, let's be honest. They're a good side. They're fourth in the Bundesliga, and they're a very attacking side. And their ethos seems to be, particularly when they go away from home, we're just going to try and score as many goals as we can. Like Benfica, they lost 4-2, but they didn't care because they got two away goals, got them back at home, 1-2-0.
It was very, very impressive, and it's two frightening fixtures Chelsea.
Not frightened by Eintracht.
You're just worried. Well, you're not worried
about it. No, I'm not worried at all.
It's just contrary.
Well, let's find out just how worried or not worried you are, Jonathan, because it's that time of the show where I have to ask you for your score predictions. United and then the first leg against Frankfurt.
United, we're going to lose 3-0.
And Frankfurt?
We're going to win 2-1.
Okay. And Mr. Chidge, what are you saying?
I say 1-1 between United and Chelsea, and I say 2-0 to Frankfurters.
Oh dear, well they're disagreeing with each other and neither of them is wholly positive, but perhaps in a week's time we'll be sitting here with two Chelsea wins under our belts. You'll have to join us then on the Chelsea Fan Show.
Da, da, da.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook, you know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.